From 1981 to 82, the competitive framework was VisiCalc, and we were trying to do a better spreadsheet on more computers. From early 83 into 84, we were shifting to not being focused on trying to do everything for all computers, but instead to focus in on doing a great application to design to take advantage of the graphics and then ultimately graphic user interface. That was controversial. We had started, after we saw how successful Lotus 1-2-3 was, in October of 1983, at the same time we were shipping that first version of Microsoft Word for the PC, we were kicking off the next generation of our spreadsheet, the project that would ultimately replace Multiplan. And the initial code name for that project was Odyssey. Ultimately, that's what became Microsoft Excel. Now, most people don't know that when Odyssey was kicked off in October of 1983, it was focused on being a better spreadsheet than Lotus 1-2-3 on the PC, not on graphic user interface. And so a brilliant programmer named Doug Klunder had figured out how to do the calculation algorithm in two dimensions simultaneously so that we could recalculate even faster than Lotus 1-2-3 and so on and so forth. But by the spring of 1984, Bill and I were convinced that we really needed to bet on graphic user interface. And so we made a tough decision. We went to the team and said that we're going to shift from doing Odyssey on the PC and instead focus its initial release on the Apple Macintosh and then ultimately on Microsoft Windows. And so that was how the competitive environment shaped our application strategy and that evolution. That was a very tough decision, in part because it made Klunder mad. And Klunder said, okay, I'll do it, but then I quit. And he lived up to his word. He delivered the first release, and then he quit. Ultimately, he did come back to the company. But Klunder was a brilliant programmer. I just feel so fortunate throughout my career that I've been exposed to amazing technical talent, and Doug Klunder was one of those guys.
Microsoft Word is already prepared for the next generation of hardware. As video and printer technologies advance, you'll be able to use its multiple fonts and type sizes. With Microsoft Word, you're ready for the future today.
We had some competitors in the word processing business. The big competitor at that time was a product from a company called MicroPro named WordStar. During the 1980s, WordStar was the dominant word processing product. It originally was on CPM 80 and then had grown to be on other environments like the IBM PC. But an upstart company from Orem, Utah, WordPerfect, was coming onto the scene. I was fortunate to have in my group a great product marketing leader named Charles Stevens. And Charles saw early on that WordPerfect was probably going to be even more important than WordStar, and he was right. WordPerfect ultimately supplanted WordStar. But initially, we were kind of focused on trying to prove that we were better than WordStar, and what we really should have been paying attention to was WordPerfect. Scott Oakey was leading our international sales organization, and Scott did a great job of helping the sales and marketing side of Microsoft really get focused in on those competitors, and in particular, trying to win against WordPerfect. That then ultimately really shaped the competitive landscape, because if you look back to what happened in the 1990s, it was Microsoft Office competing with the Lotus equivalent, which was called SmartSuite, and then WordPerfect tried to merge with Lotus, and then that fell apart, and ultimately Corel bought the WordPerfect suite, so to speak, which was based on some products from Philippe Kahn's company, Borland. So if you want to go back to the heritage of the competition or the legacy of the competition in Office applications, it really was Microsoft, Lotus, and then WordPerfect. And ultimately, we all transformed to having an Office suite. It's just that Microsoft chose to be the leader in doing the Office suite and the leader in graphical user interface applications. And that gave us a competitive advantage that ultimately caused us to succeed quite successfully against the Lotus competition and the WordPerfect or Corel competition. In 1987, I had an idea for a presentation product. We were working on one internally, led by Trish May, working for Pete Higgins. But I met some old Apple computer colleagues, and I went down to see them, a company called Forethought. I thought, wow, this is really cool, software to do overheads. I was a product marketing guy. I did a lot of overhead presentations. I thought, software to do overheads, that's a great idea. I came back to see Bill. I said, Bill, I think we really had to do this. And Bill said, no. That's just a feature of Microsoft Word. You just put it into Word. It sort of was an early example of an ongoing debate that I have with Bill. Bill always felt like we had too many modules and we needed more integration, and I always felt like we needed to have things that were heavily tuned to how people did information work. And I kept saying, Bill, no, it's not just a feature of Microsoft Word. It's a whole genre of how people do these presentations. And to his credit, he listened to me and ultimately allowed me to go forward and spend, I think it was $15 or $17 million of the company's money to buy this company in Silicon Valley called Forethought for the product known as PowerPoint. And that acquisition took place in 1987. By 1990, it looked like it wasn't a very smart idea because not very many people were using PowerPoint. And of course, today we know that PowerPoint is oftentimes the number two, or in some cases even the number one most used tool. There's a balance there in terms of being responsive, you know, the agility, and also persevering. In fact, I would say during a lot of the 1980s, I think Bill at times may have been frustrated with me that he didn't think we were moving, you know, fast enough or changing fast enough. But I actually felt we had to just really be committed to our vision of a graphical user interface suite of applications. Just keep pounding away at that, pounding away at that. And I think at times Bill wanted us to do more to try and change or shift the strategy. So I want to explain there's a little bit of a balance there. There were a lot of shifts early on as the whole marketplace was getting defined. But in my view, there was less change after that. In other words, the framework, the structure of the marketplace and what people wanted got to a point where it was more stable. And then it was a matter of just execution. We believed in graphic user interface. We believed in Windows and the Macintosh. Ironically, in 1986, Bill and Steve Ballmer had convinced Jim Manzi of Lotus to sign a commitment to do Lotus 1-2-3 for Microsoft Windows. Now you might say, well, you know, why, you know, we compete with them, but we were also in a sense partners with them. We wanted them to use our operating system capabilities. We wanted them to use Windows. So the opportunity was there for Lotus to execute on doing graphical application, a Windows application. I just think they drugged their feet. I don't think they thought it was all that important. And I would say the same thing for WordPerfect. I had conversations with Pete Peterson where I would just say, look, we're going to succeed by focusing on a graphic user interface, and I know you don't really believe in. And so in both cases, they left the door open for us by being slow to move to Windows, by not really supporting the Apple Macintosh. Our early commitment to Apple Macintosh taught us a lot about how to do these types of applications. And we continued to do Office on the Macintosh. In fact, we still do to this day. And we invested in doing the Windows version when our competitors were slow to do that. The other thing that became important was our vision that people would want to buy a suite of applications. You and I take that for granted today, but in the late 1980s, people thought that was a sort of a brain dead idea. Of course people will buy best of breed. They'll buy what they think is the best spreadsheet and the best word processor. And the idea that you'd get a suite of these applications, that won't matter, or so the conventional wisdom was. I always believed, in fact, as I mentioned to you, when I came to Microsoft, part of the reason I came was because I knew we were committed to do a suite of applications, and I believed we should package them together. And so in the late 1980s, first with the Macintosh, I believe in 1988, and then with Windows in 1990, we put together the Office suite of applications. And really at that point in time, it was just a bundle of standalone applications. But ultimately, of course, we got better and better and better at bringing the products together. So if you take those three elements, the commitment to graphic user interface, the commitment to a suite, the commitment to invest in new areas of information work, that became the foundation that led to the success that we know today as the Office Applications business. You know, when you're young, you're 23 years old. I mean, Bill's a brilliant guy, but he's like 25. And so we're all kind of figuring this out together. Bill was a great leader. Bill liked to argue. He liked to push back, but he listens. I admire that about Bill. To this day, I admire that. He's even better at it now. And so here we were all working together for something that we passionately believed in. And I think part of what helped me in those discussions with Bill is that even if he thought I was wrong, he knew that I came from it with the right spirit. My passion for software, my passion for software to do information work, my passion for what is now Microsoft Office. And so I think my commitment to that gave me some credibility that helped me in those discussions. And of course, as I said, he's a terrific leader. Terrific leaders have the courage of their convictions, but they also listen and they also think. And that characterizes the relationship with Bill. Well, we made mistakes along the way. I believe it was a mistake to try and do multi-plan on all those computers instead of be focused. And I did bring that up with Bill early in my Microsoft career. And that was probably one of the two or three largest arguments I ever had with Bill. You know, we can look back and debate about who was right or who was wrong. But in any case, we were always learning. When we decided to move the Excel product or Odyssey, what became Excel, over to the Macintosh, that was a big decision. You know, we knew that after it was done, we were going to lose Clunder, who we valued tremendously. And we might have been wrong. And by the way, in the summer of 1985, we looked like we might have been wrong on two dimensions. By then, the Macintosh was floundering. In fact, Jobs was in the process of getting fired from Apple Computers. John Sculley fired him. And so we had bet our applications business on this graphic user interface concept on the Mac, and it looked like the Mac was going to fail. And in addition, Lotus had come out with a competitive product called Jazz. And Steve Jobs was telling people that Lotus Jazz was going to be 30%, 50% or more of all software on the Macintosh. And so here we were committed to doing a great spreadsheet product as well as a word processing product and a database product and a charting product on the Macintosh. And now Steve Jobs is going around telling everybody that our stuff is going to be irrelevant and Lotus Jazz is going to dominate software. Those are scary times. And one of my favorite product stories came out in a publication called InfoWorld later that year when both Jazz and Excel were in the marketplace. And it said that Excel was outselling Jazz 10 to 0. Not even 10 to 1, 10 to 0. And there were some jokes in the industry about how there might be more Lotus Jazz returned than there were actual sales. We can look back now and laugh about that, but those were scary times when we thought, are we really making the right bet? Then I had the audacity to say we should do a product like Jazz called Microsoft Works, because there was a successful product called AppleWorks. And I remember the conversation with Bill in November of 85. You know, should we really do this works thing? I don't know. How are we going to position it versus what we're doing with Excel and Word? And there were two key things that came out of that conversation with Bill. And it's part of why I admire and respect him as a strategist. Number one, I was able to persuade him that we could position the works product as the simple integrated product as compared to the depth products. So he respected the positioning. And the other thing is he said, it's better to cannibalize yourself than let somebody else cannibalize you. That's the first time I clearly remember him saying that in a conversation. And so we went ahead with that project, created Microsoft Works on the Macintosh, and then ultimately on the PC, and then ultimately on Windows, and ended up with a terrifically successful product. So there were a lot of those times where today we can look back and say the decision was obvious, but the answer at the time was far from obvious. And we made mistakes, but another important thing I learned from Bill is it's okay to make mistakes. In fact, the biggest mistake we'll ever make is to be so cautious that we try not to make any mistake. If we're not out there trying things, learning, then we're probably ultimately going to get wiped out because it's a fast-moving business. I remember this most clearly by the year 2000, which was when Steve Ballmer was asking me to come back from leading worldwide sales and marketing to the business division. There was a perception that Microsoft Office was done, that the market was saturated, that everybody who had a personal computer got Microsoft Office, and that the current state of the art with Microsoft Office was all that they needed. And so that was a predominant perception. So I had this conversation with Steve Ballmer. He's now taken over as CEO of the company. And he says, Jeff, I really want you to come back to the product groups. And I said, Steve, I love my job. Why is it so important that I come back to the product groups? And he says, Jeff, it's all about growth, growth, growth. Yeah, I had a few issues with the idea, but I've always believed in terms of my career that I could find a way to enjoy my work. And if the company, if people like Bill and Steve thought it was the most important thing for me to do, that was an important responsibility I have. And Steve clearly thought this was important. So by August of 2000, I had come back to what became the business division. And my belief was that Office was far from done. You know, the field organization was pessimistic. They said, you know, people don't want another feature in the word processor. They don't want another feature in the spreadsheet. So nobody's going to buy these upgrades and so on and so forth. And I believed that there was just so much more for us to do in information work. And similarly, Bill believed that there was more that we could do, and he trusted me. So I essentially challenged the team. I said, are we in the business of creating and selling spreadsheets and word processors? And if that's our business, there's not a lot of growth potential. On the other hand, if we're in the business of using the magic of software to significantly improve how people do information work, well, that's a huge business where we have a very small percentage and plenty of room for growth. So we started projects like InfoPath, which was a forms-based product. And we got into unified communications with Microsoft Office Communicator. And Chris Prattley created a R&D lab approach to try and get us to think about new ways of interaction. You know, some of those things work better than others, but it was all part of this idea that we were going to reshape our thinking about information work and use Office as the brand for driving that. I was convinced. I believed that within 10 years, during that decade, we would be able to more than double the Microsoft Office business by making it a broader business and more valuable to customers. And in fact, we more than doubled the business in about 7 years. So we were about 2.5-3 years ahead of my schedule. I think one of the tough lessons we learned was to be more self-aware, more aware of how others were perceiving us. Let's go back to something that we talked about earlier, the sort of growing up in this industry, and you know, we think of ourselves as just a bunch of guys trying to create great software. And I remember very vividly, probably around 1992, 1993, having dinner with a Nebraska friend, U.S. Senator Bob Kerry, and it was with Pete Higgins and our wives, and Bob is kind of saying, you guys are being naive. You don't understand the importance of Washington, D.C. to what you do. And I went back and I remember being curious about it because, you know, we just think of ourselves as software guys in the other Washington. So why is Washington, D.C. all that important? Well, of course, 3 or 4 years from then, I would understand. See, we thought of ourselves as folks that are just trying to build great software, when the rest of the industry clearly thought of us as very intense competitors with a market position that in their view had the potential to be abused. And that lack of self-awareness, that lack of understanding or empathy to what how others might see us, I think was a very important lesson. And so that self-awareness, I think, is one of the toughest lessons, or the importance of that self-awareness is one of the toughest lessons that I personally learned from the Department of Justice episode. There's something incredibly special about being given the opportunity to help create what is now a big industry. You know, I couldn't have been more lucky in my life. I might have ended up being a bureaucrat at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, but instead, I was given the opportunity to help lead the creation of Microsoft Office. And also, I would say, help lead the creation of Microsoft. Part of my legacy, as I look back, is not only the products that we worked on, but the people that I hired, the organizations that we built, the capacity that we created to do great software. We learned early on the principles of leverage, and part of leverage in organizations is creating the culture, bringing in the people who can do far more than you can do by yourself. When I joined, the company was about 100 employees, and I was able to know almost everybody, if not everybody, in the company. When I left, the company was 91,000 employees, almost 20, 25 times the size of my hometown. And so there was that, you kind of lose some of that closeness that comes from being a part of that small group who's helping to change the world. But I think there's a lot of opportunity for Microsoft employees today to continue to feel that sense of the magic of software and how it can transform what people can do. And so while we're a much larger company and I miss some of the elements of the smallness, it's just different in some of the characteristics than what I experienced. And that doesn't mean what I experienced is better. In some respects, the platform that they have is even bigger. The breadth of the company is such that the opportunities are even more magnificent than we thought of them in 1981. We never believed that there would be tens of billions of dollar software company. We, in fact, thought the hardware companies might wipe software companies out. And so we weren't sure that there would ever be a $100 million software company. But Microsoft will be the first $100 billion software company. It may take some time, but that'll happen because of the talent and the energy and the passion that people have here for the magic of software.